We know more about autism than we used to. We certainly know there are more people living with the condition. And as time goes on, new and better ways are developed for helping people understand autism and develop the full potential of people living with it. The Center for Autism and Related Disorders, often just called CARD, has a branch in Eugene. And CARD Eugene will begin offering workshops for parents later this week to assist the parents of children with autism. Eric Shannon is the outreach coordinator and workshop facilitator and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Eric, welcome.
Good morning. Nice to be here, Jeff.
Tell us a bit about CARD and how long it's been around, and just give us a sense for what that's all about.
Yeah, so CARD was opened in 1990 by Dr. Doreen Grandpache. We opened in the Southern California area. Since that time, we've really expanded. We have about 60 offices nationwide now. We're in a number of states. We even have 7 affiliate locations outside of the country. And recently, we've started opening up here in Oregon. Our Portland office opened in January of 2015, Salem in September of 2015, and here in Eugene in November.
Pardon me for getting quite so basic, but it occurs to me as we head into this discussion that a lot of people don't really know how to define autism, and it seems like that's changing over time anyway. So what is the current definition you work with?
So we look at autism as there has to be 3 deficits, and this is all diagnosed by a doctor or a psychologist, and the deficits have to be in communication skills, in social skills, and then some sort of what we call stereotypies or repetitive behaviors. There has to have to be a deficit in each of those categories.
All right. All 3 together equals autism spectrum disorder.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the traditional definition, although we no longer diagnose Asperger's syndrome, the traditional definition is no communication deficits. It's just social deficits and repetitive behaviors.
And Asperger's has been merged into autism spectrum disorder by the last DSM, isn't that right?
The diagnostic. Yes, under the same umbrella of autism spectrum disorder.
Okay. The growth of autism certainly seems to be robust. I mean, are the diagnoses still growing every year, and particularly in Oregon, where it seemed like there was an especially sharp increase?
Yeah, I don't actually have the specific Oregon's rates, but it's up to 1 in 68 now. That the CDC says every child is 1 in 68 chance. I heard a study recently that it might be as high as 1 in 45, although that has not been verified by the CDC.
And do we think that the rise is because there's more autism spectrum disorder happening or more things that are recognized? More, in other words, more incidents or more diagnosis?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough question. Obviously, we're diagnosing a lot more. The opportunity to have a child diagnosed is happening a lot more. I don't know, to be perfectly honest with you. I look at things from a behavioral perspective, but I don't know what is causing the rise.
So what kind of approach does CARD offer to people with autism and their families?
So we look at things from a strictly behavioral perspective. In changing the ways that we interact with our clients, we can create change in their behavior. We look at behavior in 3 ways. There is the antecedent, everything that happens before the behavior. There's the behavior itself, whether it's good or bad. And then there's the consequence, which is everything that happens after the behavior. By modifying the environment, the antecedents before the behavior, we create an opportunity for our child to be more successful. And I apologize, I say child, even though we do work with kids, teens, and adults. So in creating those antecedent modifications, we give the child a better chance of being successful. When we see good behavior, we then reward that with reinforcing it. By creating those consequences afterward, we can create a better chance of the child performing the good behaviors in the future. And then anytime there's a bad behavior, we do not reinforce that behavior. Our therapists are trained to only reinforce the good behaviors, not the bad ones. And so for the idea is that those bad behaviors will not occur as often in the future.
So no negative consequences of the bad behaviors, only positive reinforcement for the good ones?
Exactly. Positive reinforcement is what we are all about.
We are talking to Eric Shannon at the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, or CARD, the Eugene office. He's the outreach coordinator there and the facilitator of some workshops coming up later this week. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issue of people on the spectrum, the autism spectrum disorder spectrum. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I wonder about the degree of difficulty just in making an assessment in the first place, at figuring out what are good reinforcements for behavior.
Yeah, we do what we call preference assessments with our clients constantly. If our clients are not motivated to succeed, then we are just not going to be successful. So we're in constant communication with our kiddos about what they want to work for, what makes them happy. We talk to parents. We talk to teachers. We really try to understand what is motivating our kiddos, and then we use that to hopefully create change in their behavior.
Is there an approach unique to CARD? I mean, you mentioned Dr. Doreen Grandpuche got this started, and she's got some distinct views about how to approach behavior with people on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'd say it's a unique approach, but what we do is we really focus on what we call natural environment training. You know, we can teach our kiddos some things just sitting down at the table with a therapist one-on-one, and the original forms of ABA therapy took this approach. The problem with that is if the kiddo is not learning in the natural environment as well, it won't generalize over. It won't generalize over to other people, other environments, other situations. So we do natural environment training. That's the real focus of what we do. We put our kiddos in real life situations first by role playing those situations with the therapist, and then actually going out and doing it. We're out in the community. Sometimes we will be in the school with individuals. And we put them in the natural environment, and we coach them through that. And through learning in that form, hopefully when we're not there, that it will generalize over, and they'll be more successful without us there.
When you say generalize over, in other words, that you can duplicate the results you get in one environment in many more?
Precisely. Many more. Different environments, different individuals, different times of the day. If we're not working on things in many different environments, then it's not going to generalize over.
And how do you measure success? How do you figure out when things are going properly and when they're you're on the glide path you want?
Yeah, there's not a defined point in which we no longer work with an individual, but we always like to say that we like to get fired by the family. If the family no longer needs us there, if we've transferred our skills over to the parents, siblings, anyone else that might be in the kiddo's life, then there's really no need for us to be there, and we can effectively leave.
So that's a good moment, actually, when the parent says, you know
Absolutely.
What, I don't need you anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely. And when that happens, we still keep in touch with the families. Generally, the supervisor who is assigned to the case will still once a month have a phone call or a FaceTime talk with the family, but we don't need to be there as often as we were. It doesn't need to be as intense.
And so, see, when you say that the mark of success is the parents fire you, why do they often hire you? I'm just curious to know about what are the usual issues that people will come to you with and say, look, I really need help with. Like, what's the top of the list for the things that parents will bring to your attention at CARD?
I would say it's two different things. It's behavioral issues, whether it's, you know, tantruming, a number of behavioral issues that they can come up. Whether it could be the repetitive behaviors, the stereotypies that we call those repetitive behaviors, they may get in the way of functioning. And then it's also communication. That is really when we get in with a family and with a kiddo, that's what we attack right off the bat is communication. We see that oftentimes if a child cannot effectively communicate, then there's going to be a huge amount of behaviors. If you don't know how to ask for, hey, I need a drink of water, it can be extraordinarily frustrating to be in your body and not being able to effectively communicate to somebody that you need a drink of water. So that's the first thing that we do. We go in and we work on communication right off the bat.
I can see the point where if you're going to get really frustrated about something, I mean, that would be the top of the list, and then behaviors would tend to cascade out of that.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the strategies you use in communication? What are some of the things that the parents will learn day one in one of these workshops?
So the first thing is that we teach receptive communication, in which the child needs to understand what we are talking about. So, if it's a glass of water, then we're going to make sure that they know, using a few different techniques, that when we say water, we mean, you know, that glass of water. From there, we're going to work on expressive communication. Now, some of our kiddos are nonverbal and cannot say the words. So if that's the case, then we have a couple different forms that communication can take place. There's PECS, which is the picture exchange communication system. And it shows the form of the child giving us a picture of something that they want. So that's their way to communicate. iPads nowadays have really advanced things, that there's communication devices on iPads to where the child can press what they want and it'll say it for them. So those are some ways that we can do it if the child is not verbal.
That seems like it offers a fair amount of promise there, new technologies. I mean, between iPads and smartphones and everything else, it seems like there's probably stuff coming along every day that you have to assess and go, okay, this might work for us, and this we'll have to take a longer look at.
Yeah, and really it depends on the kiddo. Some things work with some kids, some don't. So the more options that are out there, the better.
Eric Shannon's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about children with autism, well, people of all ages with autism, in fact, but workshops offered through his group, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, which is CARD, where he's the outreach coordinator and the workshop facilitator. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. You may have lots of questions or comments or experiences with people on the autism spectrum and ways in which they've been helped. We'd like to hear those. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Does it take a while for one thing, Eric, for parents to come in the door? I mean, do some parents really resist a diagnosis of autism?
It can be tough. You know, it can be a very emotional, difficult time. And, you know, I interact with a lot of parents that we've been helping, and they just say, I wish that I would have accepted it earlier. I wish that I would have gone out and gotten treatment earlier. The earlier that we can start working with a kiddo, the better. So it can be a very difficult time, and I've never been in that position. I don't even try to put myself in their shoes. It's got to be extraordinarily difficult. But the one thing I can say is that parents have always come back to me and said, I wish that I would have accepted treatment sooner.
And what's generally the sweet spot? Is there a particular age at which it is best to deal with to give what you're doing to certain people with dealing with autism?
Yeah, we like to say that. Ideally, we start working with a kid before the age of four, before they get into the school system and those deficits start to show a little bit more. We can create a lot more change the earlier the child is. However, we help kids, teens, and adults. I've worked with adults before that we were just trying to get them more independent and getting them in a place where they could go out and get a job and really help in society. So we will take on any comers, any age group, but the earlier the better.
Is there a typical client, or do they just run the gamut? I mean, you're going to have different sorts of traits all along the autism spectrum.
They are. It's all across the board. The cliche is that no child with autism is the same. It's absolutely true. Although it's a cliche, it's absolutely true. Every single kiddo is entirely different.
And so what you're talking about that Doreen Grandpachet put in place here when she started the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, and in fact before that, this all comes under the heading of applied behavior analysis, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so this is just the process we've already been discussing here?
Yes, yeah, it's applied behavior analysis therapy.
All right, so what's the usual run of time between the time that somebody comes in and says, hey, look, I need some help here, and the time where they would fire you and say, you know what, we got it from here?
Yeah, generally a few years. Again, every kiddo is different. But all of these studies have shown that intensive therapy needs to take place over the course of at least 2 years. Sometimes they say at least 3 years. So generally we're with the kiddos for quite a while.
Is there any follow-up, or does it need to be refreshing? I mean, once somebody reaches a certain level where they can function reasonably well, or within the expectations of the parents anyway, do they need to come back, or is there backsliding if they don't? I mean, I was curious about where things go in follow-up.
Yeah, well, we work with six-month contracts with the insurance company, but as long as there's still a need for us to be there, those contracts will get renewed. I won't say 100% of the time, but it very, very rarely happens that a contract is not renewed if we're still needed there. So we will remain until we are no longer needed.
And given the diversity in the people that you get, I mean, is there any? I mean, you apply the same general principles, but are the rewards and the general approaches within those principles going to be very, very different from person to person?
Yeah. Like I said, whatever the child is motivated by, that's what we use. We have our supervisors that are assigned to each case. The supervisor has their master's degree and usually has a certificate called a BCBA, which is the Board Certified Behavior Analyst. Passing the BCBA has often been compared to passing the bar exam as a lawyer. The supervisor is going to be on the case. They're going to be the ones that we have a general program in place, but they're going to design things specifically for each client.
Is autism, or rather, is applied behavior analysis the accepted approach? I mean, is it the most accepted one? I guess is what I'm getting at.
It is the only approach to treating autism that has been backed up by evidence.
Okay, how much controversy is there within the autism spectrum disorder community about the idea of even calling it a disorder? I mean, we're starting to hear, not starting, in fact, I've been hearing for a couple of years now about the concept of neurodiversity and neurotypicality and stuff like that. So I mean, does it give you some heat sometimes to even continue to call yourselves the Center for Autism and Related Disorders?
Not so much. I haven't experienced that. I know that some people are sensitive to labeling in some instances, you know, but I haven't experienced much with that at all, no.
Okay. So give me an example of some of the motivators that you use. I'm curious to know what sorts of things work for some of the clients you bring into the center.
Yeah, some of it can be things like playing games. Maybe some time on your iPad. It might be longer term. If we're working with an older individual, it'll be the long-term goal of, you know, going out and having a job. It might be there are times that we'll use edibles. We'll use, you know, gummies and you know, maybe apple juice, something like that the child might be motivated by. Oftentimes it's activities. Maybe after working today, we're going to go to the park. Things like that. We use, it's stuff that's very natural. It's things that pretty much any kiddo would enjoy oftentimes.
It sounds like it must be quite a shopping trip to stock the center for the things you need to have as motivators.
Sometimes. In general, we're looking at the parents for those things that we're going to be using, yeah.
Eric Shannon's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about workshops for parents of autistic children offered by his group, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, or CARD, which has a chapter in Eugene and has chapters all over the country. Those will start this Friday, April 8th. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about autism spectrum disorder and approaches to dealing with it. 800-838-3760 to come into the conversation by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned insurance company payments, as 6 months contracts. So how generally good is or not is insurance coverage for families that are dealing with family members with autism spectrum disorder?
Yeah, really, realistically, the reason that we came up into Oregon is because the mandate says that insurance companies have to now pay for ABA treatment. That took place January 1st of 2015. So when we come to the insurance company and say, hey, we have a child who needs us, who has these deficits, they have to pay for it. And that's the law now. So generally, we don't have any issues with it. Every once in a while, there will be an insurance company that does not want to pay for it in a certain area. But we have our team of lawyers that gets on them, and we make it happen.
And that's under Oregon state law?
It is, yes.
So then are there a bunch of states that you don't have centers in because you don't have there are no insurance requirements to make those sorts of payments?
There are some states, although we're moving in the direction of having a mandate in pretty much every single state. And I don't know exactly which states are still fighting it, but I know that there are a couple.
You talked about kids going into school. So the sweet spot is to make sure that they come into to your workshops before the age of four. What sorts of services are available in schools, and how much have those expanded in recent years?
Yeah, in general, we go into the school system if there's a need. If maybe the school doesn't have the support to help out one of our kiddos, we don't often go into schools. It is an option. But we don't often do that. We, however, are starting to open up what we call CARD academies, which is private schools that are centered to help the individuals that come into our program. And those are popping up. I think we have seven of them across the country, and we're looking at opening up more of those.
All right. So, just for to help parents understand, I mean, what sorts of services are available in the way of individual education plans, IEPs, that sort of thing, when they take kids who are on the spectrum into school?
Yeah, we will go to the IEP meeting with families. and help the parents fight for what their kiddos need. And we're just another voice. We know the kiddos pretty well. We know what motivates them. We know what may trigger some problem behaviors, things like that. So we just try to offer that knowledge to the school system as well.
When you go back and look at the forming of CARD back in 1990, and again, this is the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, have there been vast changes in the ways that we approach people on the spectrum, or is it just sort of a logical step-by-step evolution?
Yeah, I would say it's more of a logical step-by-step evolution. Obviously, 26 years ago, we didn't know everything that we know now about autism, and we're still learning more every single year. We're learning new techniques. So I think it's been more of a logical step-by-step. The basis of the program is still the same. We've just kind of evolved and grown throughout the time.
Do we know much more over time about causes of autism?
Unfortunately, there's still a lot that we don't know about the causes. And again, that's not my field of expertise, but we still are scrambling to figure out why these rates are rising.
All right. We talked in general terms about the workshops that start this Friday. Give us the full workup, how long and where and how much, all the pertinent information.
Right. So they'll be free to parents. We're very excited to be running them. It'll be the second Friday of every month at Hilliard Community Center in Eugene. The first one is going to be just an introduction to autism and ABA. That's going to be this Friday, April 8th, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. And it'll be 6:30 to 7:30 every second Friday. On May 13th, the second one will be behavior management and why is my child doing that. And the third one on June 10th will be how do I get my child to ask for things. We'll be working on communication.
Okay. Just those three? Is that the whole series?
Those are the three that we have scheduled now, and it'll continue to be the second Friday of every month after that.
Okay, got it. So you got the topics lined out for the first three and then ongoing.
Exactly.
Second Friday of every month at the Hilliard Community Center on 2580 Hilliard Street in Eugene. CARD is at the Center for Autism and Related Disorders. The Eugene chapter has Eric Shannon as the outreach coordinator. He's been our guest on The Exchange today. Eric, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Good to have you.